Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Traditionalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 26th of September 2017. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and because it's Tuesday, we've got Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us for the day. Matt, how are you doing today?
Excellent, thank you. Thank you for having me on again.
You're welcome, you're welcome. We've got some really good news to start off with today. I'm sure most of our listeners are aware that there was a German election yesterday or the day before, Sunday, I believe it was actually, and we had a rather unexpected result. I had thought that the alternative for Deutschland would maybe get one or two seats, weren't going to do that well, and they've actually done really, really well. They're now the third largest party in Germany. They've got 90 seats in the Bundestag. And although they're not ethnic nationalists, they are civic nationalists, and the media are calling them far right. All the Jewish groups across the world are going absolutely wild about it. So I thought we should probably have a bit of a discussion about the alternative for Deutschland and learn a bit about what their platforms are and also just what went on in Germany. So what I've got a rather good article that explains everything that went on. I think I could read some of that out and then perhaps we could stop and discuss what was covered in it, Matt, I guess. It says, Germany's far right, of course the media call anything just slightly to the right of centre far right, Germany's far right Alternative for Germany party has warned Chancellor Angela Merkel that they will put a stop to what they call an invasion of foreigners after becoming the third largest party in parliament last night. The anti-immigration AfD won 12.6% in an election which saw both Merkel's Christian Democratic Union, Christian only in name, CDU, and her coalition partners hemorrhaging millions of votes to the far right. However, the AfD celebrations came to an abrupt end on Monday morning when one of their leaders announced that she was refusing to join them in parliament. Frauke Petri, co-leader of AfD, stormed out of a news conference after saying she would take up her seat but would not be part of AfD's parliamentary group. Mrs. Petri said the AfD were an anarchistic party and could be successful in opposition but would not be able to offer voters a credible option as a government. For this reason, she had decided not to take up her seat as part of the AfD group. She also clashed with others in the party by seeking the expulsion of senior member Bjorn Hook, who has called for Berlin's Holocaust Memorial a monument of shame and said history books should be rewritten to focus more on German victims of the Nazis. Alexander Goland, one of the AfD's top candidates, said neither he nor the other top candidate, Alice Weidel, nor co-leader Jorge Meuthen knew why Petri left. But speaking during the conference, Mr. Goland said, "The 1 million refugees and migrants who have entered Germany since 2015 were taking away a piece of this country. He has vowed to hunt Angela Merkel down during her fourth term, adding, we will reclaim our country and our people." He said the reason why the party had won such a large part of the vote was due to the way they uncompromisingly addressed the aftermath of the migrant crisis. 1 million people, foreigners, being brought into this country are taking away a piece of this country, and we as the AfD don't want that, Mr. Goland was quoted as saying by the BBC. "We say, I don't want to lose Germany to an invasion of foreigners from a different culture. Very simple." Close quote. What a breath of fresh air, Matt, to hear a mainstream politician that's just been voted into parliament saying he doesn't want to see his country invaded by foreigners and he's going to put a stop to it. What are your thoughts on this?
Can you believe that this is something that we celebrate? You know, something so commonsensical with the crime rate going through the roof and rapes going through the roof. These foreigners being allowed to vote. And of course, voting for, you know, the SPD or even Merkel's party, that we actually have to celebrate, you know, basic common sense. my view of the matter is that, you know, the two establishment parties took just about half of the electorate. Merkel says she's not going to work, of course, with the AfD, and she wants nothing to do with them. So it doesn't matter. The people who voted for them are irrelevant as far as governing is concerned. But she still needs a coalition to function. And that's not going to be possible. Because you're going to have to work with the FDP, which is like, you know, the British Liberal Party, and the Green Party, which is a very small, you know. So I don't know how that's even going to work, if it's going to work. So a governing coalition without the AfD may well be impossible. And now that's my first thought, having read this and having been I've only been following the major media says that Merkel has wiped out the far right, you know, in the headlines, hoping that people wouldn't read the rest of the article. But I guess it's been since the 40s. This has been the lowest votes for the establishment parties. So it is a defeat for her. And God knows how much fraud. We know in the French election there was fraud all over the place. And I'm sure there was fraud here for her to get at the SPD to even get over 20% of the vote. But together they only have half. And so governing the country is going to be almost impossible.
Well, apparently they had 90% between them in the 70s and the 80s. They had the whole country sewn up basically just between these two parties. And the opposition that was against Merkel or that she was in coalition with, you know, her main opposition was this Jew, Scholz, who's even worse than Angela Merkel, if you can believe that. And they've lost out big time. They were expecting to get a lot more of the vote, and they've only got 20%. So if you think she's got 30%, she's got twice as much support as the AfD, but her nearest rival or opposition that she was in coalition with is only got 20%. So they're only sort of 25% more votes than people that voted for the AfD. And I've seen another a poll that was taken where 49% of the people questions said that they support the AfD's policies. And the reason why, I don't know why they didn't actually vote for them. They must have voted for some of these other parties. But they believe that the AfD are going to stand up for them. I mean, it's not just the fact that they are speaking out against immigration, they're speaking out against Islamification, but, you know, they've really done the unthinkable. They've pointed out that the Holocaust Memorial in the middle of Berlin is a memorial of shame, and that Germany is the only country in the world that puts up a memorial to something that they are embarrassed about, something that they don't want to remember. Why would you want to put something there that reminds you of bad things that you've done or supposed to have done? And, you know, this is revolutionary for a mainstream politician to say that. And the Jews all around the world are having kittens about this. All these Jewish organizations are saying that Nazis are in the Bundestag again. They're making a terrible fuss about it. And the German people themselves, they were rioting on the night of the election. I'll just read the next quote, next piece from this quote here. It says, the news that the AfD had become the third largest party in parliament led to protests across Germany on Sunday evening. Activists chanting anti-Nazi slogans and waving banners surrounded the Berlin nightclub being used by the AfD to celebrate their win on Sunday night. More marchers were pictured in Frankfurt holding a banner which read, Frankfurt hates the AfD. And their success is the first time in 60 years that the far right has garnered enough votes to secure such a show of strength in the Bundestag. The Greens said the shock result meant that the Nazis were in parliament again. One report said that in parts of the former East Germany, the AfD had polled 45% of the vote. The AfD's strong showing could see them taking as many as 90 seats. And then we can hear what the other parties did. Angela Merkel's Christian Democratic Union took 33% of the vote, and that's down 8.5 points from the last election. And its former coalition partners, the Social Democratic Party, only got 20%, meaning that both parties saw their worst results since 1949. And Mrs. Merkel will now have to forge a messy three-way arrangement with the Liberal FDP and the Greens, which is what you were saying there, Matt, isn't it? It's about this coalition that she's going to have to form. I believe they're calling it a Jamaican coalition just because of colours that are involved in the groups that are taking part in it. Now, I know that you were saying just before we went on air about the other German group, the other German nationalist group. I've momentarily forgotten their initials.
The NPD?
Yeah, the NPD. They were the ones that people used to support, but I don't think I heard of anything from them in this election. I don't think they even had a chance. So the fact that the NPD didn't actually get in, that doesn't worry me. I'm just very pleased that the AfD have got in. Are you pleased with this result?
I am. But we know that there was tremendous vote fraud in the French election, and I guarantee you the same thing happened here. Because there's been reports all over the place that the AfD were polling well over 30, even 40%. And like you said, in parts of East Germany, you had half the voters supporting them. And it comes out to be, 13.5%. There was definitely vote fraud. There was vote fraud in the American election. You know, you have Hillary Clinton where her rallies were empty. Foreign polls had her at 11%, and she almost goes neck and neck with Trump. There was vote fraud all over the place, making sure that the AfD didn't win. And I think as far as the NPD is concerned, a lot of what they do is kind of semi-legal, and I think people would be even frightened to vote for them, thinking that somehow they're going to be carted out of the voting booth if that's the case. And I think that's even the case with the AfD, that the laws there are so strict. I bet you there are large chunks of German right wingers who think that a vote for them is illegal, and they've been threatened just like Trump voters have been threatened, and they don't have the First Amendment like we do. So I think there's a lot of fear in voting for them, and what's going to happen now is that the regime is going to do everything in their power to destroy these people, to divide them, to kill them, to do what they so they're not going to be in a position to govern. But it is still a symbolic victory.
Well, it's similar to when Trump won. There were riots straight away and lots of people saying, oh, not my president, and trying to cause trouble. And you've got exactly the same thing happening here. As soon as the AfD get 12% of the vote, you've got people protesting against it. You've got all the mainstream media coming out, calling them a far-right party and running them down. And refusing to interview them. I mean, I've yet to see anyone speaking positively about them on the news. I've checked all the news channels, but for how long can they just blank out what these populist parties have to say? I mean, they claim to be supporting democracy, and yet here you've got 12% of the people voting for this party, and yet the mainstream media doesn't want to portray them at all. It doesn't want to interview any of them so that we can actually hear what they have to say. And when you look at their platforms, then they're really not that extreme. I mean, what they have said is we don't want the immigrants in Germany. The ones that are already in Germany should go back. They have spoken out against gay marriage, but I do believe that one of the top people in the party is a lesbian who's married to a Sri Lankan woman, which has been brought up, but that may play in their favour because they can say, well, we're not the extreme right. We're very tolerant. We are against the Islamification of Germany because we like our liberal values, which is what we often hear from these civic nationalists. I'm just really wasn't expecting this to happen, Matt. I was recording a podcast on Sunday with Subal. And we finished that, and then this just came up on the news, and I thought, oh yeah, it's a German election. Weren't they going to get a couple of dozen members in parliament at the most? And then they said they could have 100 people in parliament. And once you check out the media, they're calling this like an earthquake, a political earthquake in Germany that you've got these people in. I mean, if you want to check out some more of what the people are saying about this, we've got Thorsten Benner, the head of the Global Public Policy Institute in Berlin, he said the AfD's rise shows that our population is no more virtuous than the French population and that even Le Pen pales in comparison. The presence of the AfD will very much change the tone of debate in Parliament, Benner warned. Meanwhile, Alexander Goland, a top candidate of the AfD, vowed to go after Merkel, saying his aim is to reclaim our country and our people. Alice Weidel, another of the AfD's most prominent candidates, vowed that her party is here to stay during the victory speech. She told supporters that the party's first move will be to establish a committee to look into legal breaches by Mrs. Merkel's government. And of course, that's because by opening up the borders to the rest of the world and inviting in anyone that wished to come in there, she broke all of Germany's laws. That had to go past Congress first, and it didn't. So I think we're going to see legal ramifications of what she's actually done by flooding the country with the third world. Merkel herself has said that she's going to listen to the concerns and anxieties of the AfD voters in order to win them back. Beatrix von Storch, one of the AfD's leaders, told the BBC the result was a huge success. It will change the political system in Germany, and it will give a voice to the opposition. She added, we will start debates on migration, we will start debates on Islam, we will start debates on the ever closer European Union. French far-right leader Marine Le Pen was quick to congratulate the AfD after they made these massive gains in the election. And Le Pen, who lost to Emmanuel Macron earlier in the year, wrote on Twitter, bravo to our allies from AfD for this historic score. It's a new symbol of the awakening of the peoples of Europe. And I think this is. I think we have got a populist awakening. Whether these politicians are going to let us down or not, we have yet to see. I mean, Donald Trump has let us down in America. But the fact he got voted in, the fact that so many people in Germany voted for this party, regardless of all the trickery that went on with the election, that shows to me that there really is an awakening in Europe, Matt. I mean, this leaves me really hopeful that we're going to see more. I know we're going to see more. We've got an election coming up in Austria, and I think the Nationalist Party are going to win there too.
Well, my fear is that Merkel is going to institute a few very symbolic measures, and that will be sufficient for the opposition. That, you know, she'll do a few things of no substance, but will be trumpeted in the press in hopes to take away votes for the next round. But even if you notice, the head of the SPD, who's, you know, a disgusting individual, did say that it's divided the country too much. That it's, but, you know, that could mean a lot of things. He could mean that we need to shut down the division. And that division is so great that he's now afraid that it's divided the country too much, and therefore we have to end the division by crushing the opposition. But it could also mean that we've gone too far and he has no choice. You know, getting such a small percentage of the vote, you know, he's going to be blamed for that to some extent. And the leaders of the party are going to be blamed for this defeat, because they are humiliated and they know, and they're well aware that the actual vote for the far right party is going to be is far greater than what was registered by the voting machines.
Well, they're already trying to silence the dissent, aren't they? I mean, they've been locking people up for Facebook posts. They've banned lots of websites over there. I mean, you can't see Dennis Wise's film, The Greatest Story Never Told. You can't find that on YouTube if you live in Germany. I don't think you're going to have problems finding the Daily Stormer anywhere in the world. But a lot of our websites are just inaccessible over there. And people have had the police go knocking at their door just for sending out tweets that are critical of immigration. So the fact that you've now got this political party that are in the Bundestag that are going to speak out against immigration and against Islamification, I mean, that's going to give a new hope to people, isn't it? I mean, how can they go around locking people up for Facebook posts if all they're saying is the same as what these politicians are saying in the Bundestag? I mean, they can't go locking up the Alternative for Deutschland without appearing to be spitting in the eye of democracy, basically. I mean, they are supposed to respond to the voters. We're supposed to vote in these parties. And in a system like you've got in Germany, it's not one party takes all. They're supposed to listen to all these different political parties that represent the interests of the people. So, you know, I think this is really going to tie their hands behind their backs, really, as far as persecuting nationalists over there is concerned. Because they're just going to look really bad for doing so. The media is obviously going to try and encourage them to do that. But this is a big help. This is a stupendous win, I think.
And one other area, it may signal a further tilt towards Russia. I know that corporate Germany has, you know, ignored the sanctions. They've made their own separate peace with Russia over the last 10 years. And now with this party coming in, that may give them even further encouragement to do that. There's a huge – Putin is rather popular in Germany because he's fluent in the language. He speaks it without an accent. The AfD has a tendency to be pro-Russian in a lot of things. And that's the other area that may change here. And that's something that someone like Merkel could do without too much of a backlash from these rioting groups. But that may well be another issue. But now having to make a deal with the Greens, whose whole platform is to be pro-EU, she's going to be pulled in numerous directions. I think at some point there may be no choice but to work with the AfD. But corporate Germany may force this coalition to go through. They force this non-congressional or non-parliamentary, drive to bring foreigners in for cheap labor to keep Germany competitive, which is really what this is all about, and to keep Germany from becoming a nationalist state. And they may force, the SPD to calm down. They may force the Greens to calm down and be able to work with Merkel to govern the country in the pro-EU direction. So it really depends on what happens. It really depends on how frightened the corporate Germany is, because they're the only ones who matter. The corporate elites in Germany, develop these policies, force these policies. And if they're going to be too frightened of repercussions from this, they may just want to shut the AfD down, or for the sake of stability, work with them and throw out a few symbolic pieces of legislation that will calm the voters down.
That's one of the main accusations that were thrown against the AfD, is that they were supportive of Russia. So I agree with you there. I think they will be speaking up for Russia and trying to get those sanctions lifted. And their biggest power base, of course, was in Eastern Germany, which was obviously Sovietized Germany. And they are also the political party of the Pegida movement. And, I remember seeing the size of that and the size of the demonstrations and what was going on over in Germany a year or so ago. This is really the fruition of that Pegida movement, this party. They're linked up with that. So, yeah, it's all just a very good day today. And it's good to actually have some good news to talk about for once. We've got another article that we can discuss here, which is pretty shocking, to tell you the truth. Very shocking, in fact. Although it's not really something that we wouldn't have expected from the Church of England. But we've got the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, who claims he has no problems with boys wearing dresses. The Archbishop of Canterbury has said it is not a problem for a boy to wear a dress, as he intervened in a row over a Church of England school that welcomed transgender pupils. Nigel and Sally Rowe, who are Christians, removed their six-year-old son from a primary school on the Isle of Wight after a boy in his class was permitted to wear a dress. The couple said that their son was confused by this, and it was wrong for young children to embrace transgenderism, as it conflicted with biblical values. They have threatened to sue the school. The Most Reverend Justin Welby was asked on LBC Radio how he would reply to objections on Christian grounds to a boy wearing a dress at school. He said, "I would say to them, I don't think that's a problem. The other family are making up their own minds. The other child is making up their own mind." He suggested that it was a parent's job to clear up any confusion, saying, "Talk to your child. Help them to understand." So not one reference to the Bible, not one reference to his authority, not even really any reference to the parents' authority, but just saying, oh yeah, just let the six-year-old make his own mind up. Let the other six-year-old make his own mind up. Who am I to make a decision for you or tell you what you should do? And it's just unbelievable, Matt, when I read this. This is the Archbishop of Canterbury saying this. What do you think of this?
Oh, it way too much. I read the Telegraph version of the article, and someone's going to be able to say that, well, there's no mention in the Bible of this phenomenon. which is the stupidest thing you could possibly say, because no society ever until this one ever believed that that was normal. It was just not an issue. Even the same thing for homosexuality. It just wasn't an issue. No one thought that that was normal. No one thought that that was anything but disgusting. So, of course, it's not going to come up very much. It just was taken for granted. This society and with the West in general is the most corrupt that's ever existed. You know, even Rome at their worst wasn't like this. They didn't have the mass media. They didn't have this Jewish invasion. They didn't have the immigrant invasion in a bad sense. And having, you know, major media support it. They didn't have the corporatization of society. This is the most evil society that's ever existed, especially in the U.S. and in Great Britain. There is no way that the writers of the Bible or church fathers could ever have pictured this level of evil. They could never have pictured a mass media or anything like that. So, of course, it's not going to be mentioned there. But you don't need the Bible for this. You just need natural law for this. Transgendered people are mentally ill. And, you know, that's everyone agreed with that up until just a few years ago. This has only been the last few years it's become trendy. The suicide rate for transgenders after their operation is very, very high. So obviously that's not the issue. It's a deeper issue for them. They're very sick people. They need to be treated with medication and not coddled and permitted to change their gender. They're sick people. And here there's pressure on, you know, the Church of England. From corporate elites. You look at any gay rights website and you'll see nothing but corporations listed. The biggest corporations in the world support the gay rights movement. You go to the Human Rights Campaign and you go to their corporate sponsor page and it's everybody who matters in corporate America. This is a purely elite corporate movement. And to the Orthodox people, I'll say this is the people you want to get involved in ecumenical relations with. It's bad enough the Roman Catholics with their clown masses and their you know 20-year-old liturgy. That's bad enough. And this current pope, who's a clown, but now the Church of England saying this. So this is going to give a big boost to the anti-ecumenical movement in the East, because this is a group of people you want to be associated with now. This is a group of people you want to join up with. You know, they're not Christian anymore. So there's going to be positive ramifications, especially in the East, where the ecumenical movement, you know, and finally, maybe the Russian Church will get out of the World Council of Churches. Finally. And because of this kind of thing, they're not want to be involved with this kind of thing anymore. And again, the World Council of Churches is also a corporate body created by the Rockefeller Foundation. So, you know, hopefully this will encourage the anti-ecumenical movement and say this is not what we want to be a part of. But there's nothing traditional about these churches, and they're going to continue to lose members as a result.
Well, this is the sort of thing that drives people away from the church. This is the sort of thing that people will point to and say, how can you be a Christian when the Archbishop of Canterbury supports transgenderism? How can you be a Christian when the Pope washes Negroes' feet and says, open up the borders to everyone that's coming in, and who am I to judge homosexuality? This is the sad thing. These leaders of the church have abdicated from their roles of actually leading and preaching what it says in the Bible. And you bring up the fact that it's against natural law, but it does say in the Bible that a man who wears a woman's clothes should be put to death. And where it says in the New Testament, it says that anyone that touches the hair on a child's head, it would be better for them to have a millstone tied around them and thrown into the sea. And of course, that's exactly what we did with homosexuals. That's right. We used to tie a millstone around them and throw them in the bog. Anglo-Saxons did that. I was just reading about it today on the alt-right.com site. Matt,
well, all societies did stuff like that. I mean, even yeah. Thomas Jefferson, one of the most liberal of the founding fathers, said that they should be executed. It was seen as a disgusting perversion, and it was seen as a favor to them to end their miserable life. Not just to protect the society, but as a favor to them, that they're so messed up that their death may be a gift to them.
Well, that's what it says about the people in Sodom as well. It says that their cries were so great at the sin that they were carrying out that it reached up to God in heaven, and he wiped out Sodom in pity on them. But, as it was a favor to them to remove them from life because of what they were doing to their actual bodies, because their souls were aware of what they're doing to their bodies, but their spirit is obviously not, and he's going in the wrong direction. We could probably go on for a lot longer talking about that, Matt, but we're reaching the end of the podcast now. I have got something that I'd like to read out before we finish. Dr. Michael Hill, the courageous and eloquent national leader of the League of the South, the largest and most prominent Southern nationalist organization in the United States, will be joining Billy Roper of the Shield Wall Network, Matt Heinbach of the Traditionalist Worker Party, Father Francis of Stormfront Radio, and many other nationalist leaders and spokespersons at the Stormfront Replacement Conference, being held Friday, September the 29th through Sunday, October the 1st in Eastern Tennessee. The conference is completely free for all vetted and approved nationalists who would like to attend. There is no charge for this conference whatsoever. And this meeting will focus on activism with breakout sessions, seminars, and discussion forums on future tactics and strategies for our movement. And anyone interested in that should email roper_billy@yahoo.com. That's roper_billy@yahoo.com as soon as possible if you want to find out more details about that. So it's good to know that Matt Heinbach is going to be there. And Matt Heinbach is going to be back on the Daily Traditionalist starting next Monday. He's going to be back here with us 5 days a week. So all the listeners can look forward to that. Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Florian Geyer. So until then, hail victory.
You've been listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.